Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, Newcastle! Welcome! Oh, it's the evening, all right. Welcome to the stand. Please welcome a man who's working his way through the 47 shades of ginger. It's Richard Herring! You actually are much better than last week's audience, so well done. I mean, they weren't as pissed as you, to be fair to them. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon then. Welcome to Richard Herring's Look, Smog on the Tyne podcast. Don't mention you, Les. Welcome. Though I was talking to Anthony Gormley. He was a bit drunk and said he came up with the, when he said that when he came up with the Angel of the North, he didn't really know what an angel was. He thought it was like a rusty aeroplane with a bum. He thought he'd get into trouble when he put it. He could have Googled it. He couldn't get internet connection, and he thought he'd get into trouble. But everyone seems to like it, so he's got it anyway. He calls it Rahalastapas. I don't know. It's good that Angel of the North. Well done on that. It's good. Got to say that. Hope no one chops that down. So welcome to... I hope no one... What, you want it to be chopped down? Bloody hell, Newcastle. There's your answer, Jason. I thought I'd test the water for him. Probably don't do that stuff. So, it's great to be here in Newcastle. Newcastle, of course, named after a wooden castle built in 1080 by Robert Curtos, that it no longer exists. So this place should be called Old and Now Non-Existent Castle. It's 1,000 years. It's not a Newcastle anymore. What's your issue with the fog on the Tyne? Share the fog. That's what I was going to say. Just share it. No one wants it. Just share it.
I haven't really got... I did all my stuff last week, but I was in Waitrose yesterday in Hitchin. Yeah? Oh, yeah. And all the parking spaces were taken because they don't do the ticket system and then people park in there illegally. You know, I do it when I can get away with it. But I was trying to park. The only place I could park was in the shoppers with kids space. There was only one of those, or a disabled space, which I wouldn't have done. So I stopped. I parked in the shoppers with kids. But I am a shopper with kids. They just weren't with me. So I had this... I mean, it'd be quite good if that's... Yeah, that's what they do. I've kind of had it all worked out. If anyone challenged me, I was going to say, I have got kids. I mean, that means pretty much anyone who's ever procreated can park in those spaces. So you could turn out old people. So I don't know if that'll get away with it, but that was the... there you go. That's all I've got. So that's all I've got. So look, we're going to crack straight on because I think, having talked to him in the dressing room for the last hour and a half, this guest's going to talk a lot. That's my guess. I think he's going to have a lot to say. He's probably best known, of course, as Jacob the Baker. And he guessed that this was what I'd talk to him about. Come in the Jacob Biscuits ads. Remember those? He was a little medium-sized baker. Will you please welcome Jason Cook, ladies and gentlemen. There you go, Jacob the Baker. Jacob the Baker. Jacob the Baker. Jacob the Baker.
Hello.
It didn't quite become the Gio Campare of the biscuit world, I'd have to say. Jacob the Baker.
It was a wild time, man. Crackers flying fucking everywhere. Didn't know where I was. I was half size. It was crazy. This is weird. Why are these chairs both pointing perpendicularly outwards?
It's so...
It looks like we're in the Huff.
Because if we go the other way, then we'll have our backs to people. Well, you know, we still will, because we're going to lean over to each other like that. But it's the best we can do.
What if we do it all like this? That'd be even stranger. Just back to back, like an 80s band.
Do an ABBA video, it'd be fine. What do you remember of the Jacob Biscuits, United Biscuits?
It's the best gig I've ever had.
Yeah.
It was amazing. How it happened.
How did you get to be Jacob the Baker?
Well,
do people remember this advert?
Yeah. You don't get to be Jacob the Baker. One becomes Jacob the Baker. It takes years of training for the French clown. Now they said, so I got a call and they said, come down and do a voiceover for what will be an animated character. And I was like, well, yeah, I'll come do it. And they're like, because your Geordie voice is so reassuring. You know what I mean? Yeah. Do you want some crackers? Come get some crackers. That was, you know.
Yeah.
You know what you would like? More crackers? You ever thought about crackers? And I did the voiceover thing for him, and it was going to be animated. And then, like, 2 weeks later, my agent rang us, and I had my daughter on my knee, and they said, oh, it's not going to be animated anymore. They want a real actor to do it, and they're going to miniaturise the actor. And I thought, well, I'm not going to get it because this face is not... You know, I wouldn't buy anything off this face. If you're not looking on the video, if you're just listening, it's eroded, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
It's falling into the sea.
I think that's fair to say. You were once a handsome man, is all I'll say.
I was fucking gorgeous
at one point, wasn't I?
I was quite the dandy.
You were lovely. At least you had that. Just look back at that.
It is. Well, you're entering that phrase. Yeah, aren't you? You've got kind eyes. I don't have kind eyes. I have worried eyes. Yeah. I do. I just look like I've done something. You don't know what it is. But I've definitely done whatever it is. So yeah, and I had my daughter on my knee and said, oh, they want someone to do it like an actor. And I was like, oh, well, an actor's going to fucking do it then. And they want you to do it. And I was like, I'll do it then. And he went, well, hang on. You're going to be like on the adverts and on the lorries and on the billboards and on the things in the shops. And I was like, I'll do it, I'll do it, I'll do it, I'll do it. And he went, do you not want to know how much money it is? And I went... you can tell us. And then he told us and I went, I'll definitely fucking do it. I'll 100% do it. Like. And then, yeah, did it for like 3 years.
No,
three years. Can't remember. But it was mad. Filmed it all in South Africa. 2 weeks in South
Africa.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Why?
If you see any advert, right, and it's there's any outside in the advert, anything, any sunlight at all, right, it's in South Africa. because they said that the temperature of the sunlight at that point of the world is the, it's the most beautiful to film with. And there's very little workers' rights in South Africa. But it's mainly the temperature of the sunlight, Richard Herron, which enables this to happen. But when we were there, there was like 200 adverts filming.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And flew us down, business class, nicked everything. The only man leaving business class was six pairs of slippers. And then, stayed in a lush hotel. Yeah. Wasn't allowed to go outside in the daytime. The guy said, the production manager, when I literally got out the car at the hotel, he went, "I heard you are a Geordie person." And I said, "I am." He went, "Do not go outside in the daytime, you will frizzle." Straight up. He said, "Stay in your hotel room. I will pay all of your room service bill. You may come out at night." That's what I did. I wrote a sitcom while I was there. I used to get a massage every lunchtime, fillet steak for lunch, and then I had to have an hour on the toilet because I've got IBS. But that's a different thing. And then on a night time, I'd go and meet everyone. "Hi, guys." It was amazing. And then I flew back. So this is funny. They said it's 2 weeks. We're going to be here for 2 weeks. And my wife, as long as I've been away from my wife and my daughter, and I got there and I said, "Look, if we work like a little bit longer, could I go home a day early? And then I could surprise them." I thought it'd be a lovely surprise to come home. And they were like, "Of course we can. There's no rights here for anybody. Of course you can work as long as you fucking want." And so we did the last like take of whatever the ads. You know, there's loads of different online ads and stuff, and they were great. I would never slag that brand. The whole experience was amazing. But they were like, "Right," and it was literally, "Cut. There's a car outside. You can get a plane right now." And I went, "Mint, in the baker's outfit." So I ran and jumped in the back of the van, and I was like, "This will be fine because I'll get changed in the van because it's half an hour at the airport." And I went, "Where's my suitcase?" Like, as we're moving, and they went, "We've already checked it in for you." And I went, "Fuck." So I'm in Cape Town Airport. I go into the business lounge, dressed as a baker, covered in a white powder. And very excited because I've just made the most money I've ever made in my entire life. And I'm like just pounding beers going, "Oh, it's good this, isn't it? Yeah, it's good this. Business class, lovely this, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, yeah." It was mad. And then on the flight, so the flight's good. All advertised people on the flight. And then, like I said, I've got IBS, irritable bowel. I don't know. A third of you will have it. I won't ask you to admit it because no one ever does. You know what I mean? But a third of us in this room will have irritable bowel. And mine's not... like the coward's one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get constipated and I feel like, fucking get in the game, shit yourself. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? You got it as well? It's like, two right, sister, two, don't touch me hand. It's like a fucking shotgun going off, isn't it? It's horrible. But Matt, you'll know that you have like triggers. If you eat certain things, you've got to avoid certain things. Now, my two things are fried food and alcohol. And so I got hammered on the flight, and then the woke us up and said, "Would you like a full English breakfast?" And I was so happy about the money, I said, "I would like a full English breakfast, please." And then there was a rumbling and a gurgling, Richard Herron. And I went into the toilet on the plane, and it was awful. It was apocalyptic.
Were people in business class going back to economy? Was it that bad?
It was the pilot was nosediving the plane. But basically, I was there for a while, and there was a banging on the door, and I was like, "I can't." I was just standing like a rabbit in the headlights, just, I just can't do anything. And she said, we're going to land, there's people waiting. Right. And I opened the door and I like shuffled out, dressed as a baker, and I shuffled out. And a bloke pushed past me and I just heard this bloke go, "Oh my God." So that was it. And then we did more of them.
Yeah,
it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I've never, like the guy who did them, like, because loads of people... Do adverts, like directors and stuff do adverts, but they don't like make it that public. This guy does. I'll tell you what he does now. He's directed all the Spider-Man films.
Wow, okay.
Well, yeah, I like to think he learnt a thing or two from a little 6-foot alcoholic Geordie in South Africa.
He didn't ask you to be in the Spider-Man films. He's going, "Let's get that guy, the little guy in the baker's
office." I think he's waiting for the right part to come up, to be honest with you, Richard Herron.
Why did they cast quite a tall person to play quite a small character?
Talent doesn't have a size. But I was miniaturised. I was green screened.
Yeah. He's not that small, though. It's like, because I imagine they nicked the idea off Big Cook, Little Cook, is what I imagine, which is a show I watched a lot. before I had children.
You watched it before you had
children? Yeah, I would wake up. When I was drinking, I would wake up about 6 o'clock in the morning and watch the Tweenies and then Big Cook, Little Cook, and sort of in a daze. I went to Longleat. I got obsessed with it, and I went to Longleat once, and they said they play those to the gorillas in the Gorilla Island because they love the moving colours and the sounds and stuff. And I think it was very similar to that. But I became quite obsessed with the relationship between Big Cook and Little Cook. And how they got to... Well, you know, why did they get together? Was Little Cook, like, tiny, or was Big Cook really big? And also, in the act who plays Little Cook is really tall, and the act who plays Big Cook is quite small. So why did they do it that way around? They could have saved themselves some green screen if they just made them the other way around. So I've got a lot, you know, I thought about it a lot.
Evidently, I
can sing you all the Big Cook.
To quite a disturbing level.
They put women in Big Cook, Little Cook. Now, have you seen that? They've redone it with women. That's not right, is it? They are those characters. Those characters are male. You can't just change the sex.
I think it's fine.
Okay. I've got no problem with the others, but Big Cook, Little Cook. Women can't cook.
Oh, Richard Herring.
Yeah, so it's good. Yeah.
It's good.
It kind of must be a weird thing. We won't talk about this much longer, but it's been
I'll
so
talk
much,
about this for the,
it's
the
so
full
much
thing
fun.
If you want.
Yeah,
I got my two mates a job on it. We did ones in London. We shot them in London, and it was I had a little van. It was amazing. I had a little baker's van, right? And they'd made it out of... Don't you snigger at me, Richard Herring. You've never... I'll tell you at the end of the story. You'd be jealous as fuck, right? And they took my measurements like a Formula One driver and made a little baker's van to my specific size. And then they got a golf cart and they took the speed limiter off the golf cart as the frame and put an extra battery in that would do 50 miles an hour. And when we're filming in South Africa, I had to drive around a pond in a park and I was getting it on two wheels. It was amazing. I was like a little criminal. Just, oh, hey man, what's wrong? You're so badass. And it was. Then we did another one where I was supposed to have been pulled over by the police in the little van, you see. And they said, oh, we need two policemen. Do you know any funny actors we could get? And so I rang a couple of my mates and I said, do you want to come and do it? It's like two days' work. And the money was, you know, for adverts for actors is incredible. And they said, oh, yeah, what do you want for it? What do you want for it? What should we give you? And I said, don't give us anything. I said, just take us for a steak dinner afterwards. We'll do the 2 days, take us for a steak dinner. And they're like, of course, yes. So we're in London, went to like the Gaucho, went to a really nice steak restaurant. Yeah. And I got the most expensive steak on the menu. And I got loads of sides. And I was like, this is amazing. And then, lads, what are you getting? And they got salads because they're both vegans. And I was like, this is uncomfortable for everybody, really, isn't it? Did another one where they said, you're going to have to get into the van. They flew the van over and they said, you've got to get in the van and it's you like going down a corridor, this dead long corridor. And I was like, all right. And they said, we've hired the green screen at Harry Potter, the biggest green screen in Europe. It's enormous, like an aircraft hangar. And one of the walls is just pure fucking green, right? And we got there and I was like, this is going to be amazing. We're back in the van, screaming it around. And I got there and there was just a little tent in the middle of this like hangouts miles away, and they were like, come over here. And I came over and they went, oh yeah, we figured out a way last night to do it with a remote control car. You don't need to drive the van at all.
Oh.
And I was like, why have we still got the biggest green screen in Europe? And I said, well, we booked it, we just thought we might as well. And I was like, is the van charged up? And they went, yes it is. And I was like, I'll see you fucking suckers later. Yeah. Just did laps of this thing and they kept going, will you come in? I was going, no! I'm Jacob the Baker and I want to be free!
I just love the idea of you crashing that and dying in the baker's... That's how you go in the baker's outfit.
He said, just hold his head up. Just hold his head up. Film that. But it was amazing. They were such brilliant people. Yeah. I used to get a hamper full of Jacob's crackers. I've made it, Mom. I've made it.
What went wrong for Jacob the Baker? Why did they stop doing?
Oh, we did all the products.
Right.
We basically ran out of things to advertise. So, do you know all the crackers? Yeah. Aye, them. We just ran out of products to do.
I mean, it's an amazing thing to get, as you say, like as an actor or a comedian, like a job like that comes along and it's sort of life-changing in terms of the amount of money you're going to make from it.
It was.
Yeah.
I'm from a place called Hebburn, which is where two matching shoes is quite it's quite the comment around the town.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great. It's just really funny. It was just the whole thing was really funny all the way
good.
Through.
I'm glad.
Should do it. What? I'm just wondering what kind of product you could do, sort of Tenor Man or something. Saga Cruises. You're in the zone for Saga
I'm
now.
Getting on.
You got your Saga brochure yet?
Not yet.
You not got one yet? 56? No. You not got a Saga brochure yet?
Not yet.
See, you on a Saga cruise. Wandering around going, I've still got me bladder, girls. Come on.
You never know.
Because that Saga cruise is 50 up.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I'm 50 now. I was 50 not so long ago. But that's 50 up.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be fresh meat.
You would be. You'd do very well. Shit.
That'd be all right, innit, man? Yeah. Get joggers on. You all right, everyone?
They'd make you do stuff. I mean, they'd make you do stuff. But they'd make you do stuff, though, for them. Like, just get their shoes and stuff. Get their newspaper.
Oh, it's a different fantasy for the 80-year-old woman. Could you pretend to be my son?
If you're into 80-year-old women, it's going to be... Because also, the 80-year-old women, all their husbands are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking be lovely.
Men die earlier.
Yeah, men die earlier. So you could just, you know, move in, get in the wills.
You always go to quite a dark place quite quickly. You could just give them a moment of love and love.
You can give them the nice few last years. You don't have to murder them. They'll just die naturally. There's no point in it. Why murder an old person? Just wait for time to take its... It's like that guy tried to kill the Queen, like, right at the end of her life. Come, just wait, mate. She's going to go.
Whoopee cushion.
So you got into stand-up comedy from the traditional route that many people have trod.
Being in bad relationship with father, bullied at school.
you're not the first...
Low self-esteem and need to be liked.
That's true. You were in the Merchant Navy, which is also the case for my friend Peter Bainham.
Yes.
What age? He was very young when he went to the Merchant Navy.
I was 18.
Oh, yeah, he was 16, I think, when he went to the Merchant Navy. So... He didn't really enjoy it in the Merchant Navy. Your dad was...
My dad and his dad and my uncles, everyone from... Because when you're from a place that's a shithole, there's very few things to do. And one of which is to fuck off into the Merchant Navy. So I did it because my dad had done it and all that. It's good life.
Yeah.
If you're a single man who likes to carouse, I think carousing's the word I would
use. To have sex with racist strangers in a boat, is have gay sex with loads of racists. Is that
straight away? You went there straight away.
That's why the cruise will be good for you. At least it's going to be old women this time rather than.
Oh, you think they're not going to be racist? How many 8-year-olds have you seen with rainbow flags lately? I don't understand it. It scares me. Now take me support hose off. Let's get with it. No, it's just, you just sort of travel around the world, really, with some pretty insane people. Because we would go away for 6 months.
Yeah.
And so it was people who just used to run away from their lives or didn't have a life. Like, we had one guy who was called The Nose because he had the biggest nose I've ever seen. That was it. That was the nickname Factory Wasn't on Overtime that day. But he, like... I've never known anyone like that. Like, he used to do you want to come to the brothel? He's from Northern Ireland. Do you want to come to the brothel with me? And I was like, I don't want to go anywhere with you. A Lord of the Rings convention, maybe. But, it was crazy. Like, you'd go to places, like, go to Ukraine and stuff like that. And, like, they had the Siemens mission in Ukraine, which is, like, you know, where they have a priest and stuff as outreach to the sailors on ships. Is also a brothel. It really goes full circle around, and it's a bar as well, and it sold champagne for $1 a bottle.
Okay.
And so whenever you'd go there, that was the biggest thing. Like, some of the crew would like to go for the brothel aspect of it. I was terrified of HIV, so I was like, you seem like nice girls, but not for me. Thanks, no, bye. But the champagne dollar a bottle, and I went ashore once, and we were leaving. We were going to sail the ship at 5, and we had a chief engineer with us called Brian, who was the best alcoholic I've ever seen. Like, the best. Like, if you... Alcoholic Olympics, gold every time. He used to drink a bottle of rum every night, and he had 4 cans of Guinness for his breakfast, and that was it. Wow. And he didn't eat anything. And you can't live like that. You can. And, well, he died.
Yeah.
He died. He died. And it was about 4 years later, I was on a different ship, and they came in and said, I just got to let you know that Brian's died. And we were like, all right. And someone said, what did he die of? And they said it was cancer of the stomach. And one of the other lads went, oh, it just goes to show you never see it coming. It's like, you're fucking, oh, I think the train was on the tracks a long time ago. But we said at lunchtime, we're going to go and get this dollar a bottle champagne. And Brian, the chief engineer, said, I'll come with you. I've never seen this sea magicians. I'll come with you. And I said, well, I'm going there and I'm coming straight back. And I'm like, and on this dock, you couldn't get a taxi or anything. It was a 2-mile walk to the dock gate where the Seaman's Mission was. I was like, I'm walking up there. I've got the trolley. I'm walking up there and I'm walking straight back with like 5 cases or whatever it was. I've never seen it. We got like halfway there and he went, I told them you wouldn't be back this afternoon. Let's go on the piss. So we sat just drinking like proper Russian vodka, proper like make you blind vodka, yeah. All the dollar bottle champagne, and it gets to like 5 o'clock, and then someone from the ship turns up and like, what the fuck are you doing here? We're sailing. Like, all right. And I turned around and Brian was just face down. And I was like, Christ, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm trying to wake him up and he won't wake up. I'm punching him in the face, which is probably counterintuitive. But and then I sort of dragged him out and I couldn't. He wouldn't wake up. He was just out. He was an absolute flaked alcoholic. And I saw an ambulance at the dock gate and I staggered over and I said to the ambulance guy, excuse me, can you take me to the ship? And he went, I'm an ambulance. No. And I said, how much money do you make a month? And he told me, and I said, what's that in American dollars? And he said, $50. I went, I'll give you $500 to take me to the ship. Right. And he went, get in the back. So I got in the back, I put all the champagne in the back, I dragged Brian, strapped him to the trolley. He's awake now and singing, I'm Charlie Jack the Sailor and the King of all the days. And the fucking ambulance driver's trying to drive all the way down. The fucking bottles are clinking everywhere. One of them burst like that. I'm going, it's not usually like this. I'm an officer on this ship. It's quite interesting, isn't it? And then we get there, and Brian's passed out again, like completely unconsciously passed out. And all the crew come down, the captain's shouting, and they're running, and they're getting the case of champagne, and he wouldn't wake up. And we got rid of the cargo, which meant the ship was higher, so the gangway was steeper, right. And I couldn't think of anything. And they're going, get him on! And no one, he's like liquid. You ever when someone's that pissed, they're just liquid. Pick them up, and they just go, not now, right? So I was a bit pissed. I just went, get the crane! So we got the crane. And I tied a rope around his feet and we hoisted him up by his feet. And we brought him in and he landed and he bumped his head. We didn't land him on his head. He like landed and it went like doom and he woke up and he went, what the fuck's going on here? And then chased me around the ship, pissed. Happy times, Richard. Yeah. Happy times. There was loads of those. All of them were different. There was another guy. These are one of my favourite people because they would all tell stories, which is what I like. I like telling stories. But there's a guy called... hang on, I'm not... He might still be alive.
Okay.
Because this is brilliant. We'll just call him Dr. Ian because he kept telling us he was a doctor. He got a doctorate in his spare time because that's what you do when you're on a ship. Fucking idiot. Right? And he was a bullshitter. You know when you meet those people who just bullshit? You know what I mean?
My brother's a spy.
You know what I mean? And those people, if you ever call them out, they'll stop doing it. See, and we're so bored, we never wanted to call him out because his stories were so good. And we'd be in the engine room working, going, which one should we get him to tell tonight? All right. And he had a one about a giraffe because... Now, all these stories have a tiny bit of truth at the bottom. He had been on the ship that had delivered the animals for Whipsnade Zoo because he had a picture of himself on the deck of a ship and there's all the cages with the, you know, the gnu and the fucking, you know, all the animals.
Yeah, good. The gnu was the one that...
Yeah.
Jumped to mind out of all the busts. The gnu.
Well, you know...
The other animals. Can only think of a gnu.
Well, Whipsnade still had the gnu-only policy in place at that point. Very, very short-sighted of them. I think as a business model, it really did fail. We had, like, gnu, hamster... stick insect, rat. It's a bit of a... Once you spent your money on the gnu, you know what I mean? But this was his story, and we used to get him to tell it because he was also one of those people that was always right, and he wouldn't play Trivial Pursuit because some of the answers are wrong. Fucking nubbit! And so we'd figure out what all day how we would try and get him to tell an animal. We'd get into an animal area, and then he would start with the Whipsnade Zoo story. And so we'd be fucking pulling engines apart, going, how should we do it? How should we do it? I don't know. So mine was, hey, bloody hell, Dr. Ian. Last night we were playing Trivial Pursuit.
Some of the answers are wrong.
Yeah, I know. And it said that the dolphin was the animal with the highest blood pressure. He was in a pre-ejaculatory state at that point. It's actually the giraffe! It's actually the giraffe! And we go, all right, how do you know that? Well, I was on the ship that brought the Whipsnade animal. No, were you really? And he was. And he would run up to his cabin, scurry up to his cabin and get the picture, and it was him on the deck. And then his giraffe story. This is the best story I've ever heard in terms of, expecting other people to believe it.
Okay.
He would say, oh, yeah, we got to Southampton docks, and we... We're taking the giraffe off, and he said, very mischievous a giraffe. I'm not sure if you're aware. Very mischievous, the giraffe. And so the giraffe got its head out of the cage and put its head into the crane driver's little box thing like that. And we're just sitting there trying not to piss ourselves laughing, going, mm-hmm. Then what happened? And he went, well, then the giraffe starts nudging the levers with its nose. And the crane driver, he runs off because he'd never seen a giraffe before. And he was frightened. So we were like, oh, bloody hell, what happened? He said, well, the cage is flying everywhere. The giraffe's nudging it with its nose, isn't it? And we were like, what did you do? He said, well, I ran and climbed to the top of the cage. He was 25 stone. I don't know how he thought he could climb to the top of the crane. I climbed to the top of the crane, one of the highlights coming up, he said, and I ran in and I saw the giraffe and I went, hey, stop it. And he did, because he knew us, right? Because he knew us. What happened then? He said, well, then I got the crane, hugely complicated piece of equipment, a crane, but now he knows how to drive it. I got the crane and I lowered the cage to the ground. Oh, thank God it was safe. But the cage was damaged. And the giraffe got out. No! And started running along the docks at Southampton. We're going, oh my God, what an amazing story, Dr. Ian, you absolute bullshitting twat. And we said, yeah, he ran, and I saw him, and then he turned right to the dock. How the fuck did the giraffe know? We said, what happened next? And then another classic bit, he went, well, then I got out my pistol and commandeered a car. Pistol? Pistol? We've got pistol in the story now, not mentioned before, but what an amazing revelation. So he said, I commandeered a car. I said, what did you say? He went, I'm going to go and get a giraffe. I mean, that's not what you say when you commandeer a car. And he said, and I followed him up the whatever the road is, the A-fucking-40 or something like that. And that's the other thing that bothered me about this story for years, is he thought that the giraffe's running along the road surface with fields all around it going, I've been on them before. Fuck it, I'm going to go on this now. This is better. This is better. Then another highlight coming up, he said, so I pulled up next to the giraffe and, I quote, flagged it down. We'd flag down the draft. We are literally dying with laughter. There'd be about eight of us. The best bit is about to come up. I'm gifting this to all your listeners. This is the best bit of the story, Richard Herring. Okay. And this was told to me with a straight face. Okay. This is better than any comedian you've ever seen ever, and I promise you, right? We said, so what happened? He said, well, I flagged it down, and then we waited at the side of the road for the van. The van. And I said, what, were you just holding its hoof? And he went, I'm not an idiot. I had it in a headlock. I swear to God he said that. I swear to God. Just standing there, the RAC man coming up going, yeah, drive on, mate, I've got this. You're all right. He knows what he's done. Don't you know what you've done? I've got loads of these.
Yeah.
I've got hours of it, mate. I've got I got a call once where the crew said, we're sinking. I said, we're 6 floors above the sea. And we're not fucking sinking. And he said, there's water coming in my cabin. So I went in, there's water pissing into his cabin. So I went to the cabin above. It was the second mate, who I know is alive, who's asked me not to put his name to this story. Okay. In the port beforehand, he bought a blow-up doll and thought for a more realistic feeling, he would fill it with warm water. So he did that, got on it, and it clearly just went... like that. The better part of the story comes next, where like we all took the mic out of him for ages, and then when you're coming into port, often the captain will pass around a clipboard for things that people might want. Like one guy liked trucks, it was like a trucking magazine, some magazine called Truck and Driver, I don't know, something like that, or like chocolate or something like that, and he put down bicycle puncture repair kit. We were like, where's the bicycle on the ship that you're using?
Oh, you never know.
So, could you have seen yourself staying on the ships for... I mean, your family did presumably stayed on the ships for years.
Yeah.
What? I mean, I know that you sort of were into comedy and loved comedy, but you were writing sketches on the ship.
No, well, I came home once and my mate was doing a competition at the comedy club that used to be at the Tyne Theatre in the basement. You must have played there in the 90s.
Yeah, we did. I think we did.
I think so. And I didn't, like, I thought at the time that the comedians were born on telly. Do you know what I mean? There was no way in. Like, I'd seen, like, Rowan Atkinson, I'd seen, like, Lenny Henry at the City Hall for 2,500 people. But I didn't realise those places existed. And then my mate, who was in the competition, Lee Fenwick, said, I'm doing a sketch show. Do you want to write some sketches? And I was like, oh, God, yeah, I will. Because, like, as much as the Merchant Navy stories are funny, like, a lot of it was just sitting listening to racist old men for quite a long time. And I was of the ecstasy generation. Everyone's in love, man, come on. And so I went away and I wrote sketches on a typewriter and then just sent them in a big manila envelope, a big brown envelope. Every time we were in a port, I would send off, like, hundreds of pages.
Right.
Because I was just sitting every night. I wrote a thing called Nativity Dogs, which was Reservoir Dogs, but with a cast of a nativity. Right. Where Mr. Orange is a cow who won't stop leaking while he's lying there. Look at Mr. Orange, he's leaking milk everywhere. And he just goes, murr. Someone must have told someone, there's prefects everywhere. It was pretty shit parody. And then I came home and they'd got the like sketch on the legs and they were doing my sketches.
Right.
So I watched them, they did like 4 of them and I was like, well, this... I just do this now. Yeah. So I faked an illness and went on the sick for a year.
Right.
On full fucking pay.
Wow.
Thank you, Norwegian employment law. And then I bought a house. Like, I bought a flat. I sold the flat, sold my car, moved back in with my mum and dad. Mother was happy. Father was not. And then it's all... And just like that. I think, like with comedy, if you want to do it, you have to give your life to it.
You do, it's that's such an interesting route. All the stories aside, just that is such an amazing route. And yeah, and Peter as well. Peter Bainham, could easily have been out there for life, and now he's in Hollywood writing for Sacha Baron Cohen. So it's like this incredible journey to go from that, And I think in the old days, more before your time, really, it was more usual to see stand-ups who had done like interesting jobs first. It's quite a, it's become quite a middle class university kind of profession, hasn't it? Yeah, so it's unusual to get someone off a ship to come into the world of sketch comedy.
In a way, but I think if you look at the boring business of it, the hyper successful comics, very few of them are the middle class.
Yeah.
Go in, you know what I mean?
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Oh, couldn't cut. But, Mickey Flanagan, Peter Kay, Ramsey, all of that lot. Sarah, all of that lot is, and I think, I think largely, I think of stand-up as a working class art form.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic storytellers, and good stories is something that working class people enjoy.
Yeah.
Just anything that makes them not think about their fucking lives. I wasn't on a ship, Jace. Just tell us more about when you were on a ship. And I don't have to worry about the mortgage for 10 fucking minutes.
But you're one of, when you mention you to comedians and comedy fans, I think you're one of the people that people really pick out as like a fantastic compere, especially, but comedian. And you are very...
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Like,
they're talking, wrong.
They are. They're not wrong. And I remember when I
You didn't have to agree.
When I came back to doing stand-up...
Hang on a second, Richard. Yeah, okay, we're going to sort this prick out here. I was being charmingly self-depreciating. Nasty. Right. Not turning around.
When I came back to doing stand-up in about 2004, I think you were living in Manchester by then.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so you were at the Frog and Bucket a lot. And you'd compare at the Frog and Bucket. Yeah. And you'd... the thing I really remember about that Frog and Bucket time was I did a show, and then there was after me, there was a late show which you hosted, mm-hmm. which was where you got the comedians as drunk as possible,
yeah.
and then sort of see what came out of their mouth. Now, I can't really remember what happened. I hope it wasn't filmed.
You kept... Well, I mean, it was, but it never went out. I just kept giving you glasses of wine.
Yeah.
And you kept downing them. And I was thinking... You don't have to down it. And that's the thing, that's the recurring thing for me, is you just kept downing the glasses of wine. I was like, you can't just, like, drink, you know, like, drink sip normally. Joke, sip joke, sip joke. You were like, yeah, apparently it's the theme of the night. Yeah, but that was, yeah, like the Frog and Bucket and the Hyena and that was up here. I used to compare those places.
Yeah.
Because they were rough as arseholes and I liked that.
but they were great. You know, the Frog and Bucket especially was a terrific club. I love playing there. You know, it's and still do, yeah. But it's but you had a sort of double out of the sketch show, you got the double act of the electronic mm-hmm. I'll let you do the name.
Announce it, please.
Can I put my glasses on? Die Klatterschenfietenmaus.
Very close, okay. But no cigar.
Okay, go.
Klatterschenfietenmaus. And that was my act. And we were the worst pop band in Europe.
Yeah.
And it was the two of us in black boiler suits, and I had pigtails.
I remember, I'd forgotten about it. I was doing a gig with Matt Green last night. He said, oh, you know, Jason, did you do that double act? I didn't even think. And I went, oh, my God,
we did a gig together, yeah. I think.
Right.
With something for just the tonic?
Yeah. No, I'd completely forgotten about it.
That's amazing. There's nothing more powerful than wandering through an audience as a 6'2" man with pigtails. They can't know what the fuck's going on. And yeah, we were just this, we used to have like song, it was all like, I had like German accents, we had terrible German accents. We'd come on and people would laugh and just go, shut the fuck up! Then we had songs like Dead Clown, Panic Attack, Your Granny Has Fallen Over and We Are Laughing. Our most popular one was When You Love Me In Your Mouth. I mean, it was... and that was really weird because we did it like on the comedy circuit and stuff and people would book us. But then other people, like, they booked us for like music festivals as a band. As like this is a real band that you should all enjoy. And they would put us on to like open these like techno festivals and stuff like that. So you had people like coming up on pills and we're like screaming at them going, panic attack, panic attack, panic attack, panic attack. And your granny has fallen, we are laughing. We did a couple of bits of telly with it.
Yeah.
We did The World Stands Up. Remember The World Stands Up?
Yes.
It was a Paramount... When Paramount Comedy had a channel and they did stand-ups from all around the world and we were the German entry. Literally the worst accents. They were the worst accents. And
did they know that you weren't German?
No. So many people, we would turn up and go, all right, where do we plug in? And they thought we were like the roadies for this like German... And like all of our sort of... publicity was about how successful we were in Germany. It was all a piss take. But some of them would just go like, oh, so you played in the Cube Club in Berlin. I was like, it doesn't even exist. We did the Tube. They tried to reboot the Tube.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And it was with Alex, the bass player from Blur.
Yeah, James.
Alex James and Connie Hook were the presenters and they thought we were a real band.
Right.
And they put us on and it was in like this warehouse of like 1,000 people. Because the Tube was made up here originally.
Yeah.
And but there was this reboot. And there was this huge gig, and I can't remember who else. There was some really famous people were on, but we were on first. And it went, I'll tell you when it went wrong, is we came on and said, shut up, to all of them. And then we said, and they'd introduced us, like Alex James and Connie Hook had been on stage and said, please welcome to Clashing Freedom House. And we'd come out. And we said, und a big hand for Alex James, one of the pioneers of British music. And they all went, yeah. And they went, we loved Oasis. We are such a big fan. And 1,000 people went, fuck off! and then just watched us in silence, just silence.
I mean, it's such a... it came out of the sketch group, did it, presumably?
Yeah, so when we did the sketches, that was like... it became the most popular one was those characters.
Such sort of mad thing, isn't it, when something can take off?
Yeah, like yeah. You know? It was crazy. Yeah. We made an album. And the logo was a clip art. It was just clip art. It was a clip art of a cat, you know, like a silhouette of a cat on a disabled parking sign. So it looked like the cat was in a wheelchair. Okay. And someone was going, is that what Declatschenken Fiedermaus means in German? Disabled cat. And I was like, no, it was just, you know, I was taking some acid and messing around with clip art. It was mental. And when we would do it in the Fringe, so we did it in the Fringe 2 years, and loads of people used to come. We used to sell like 150 tickets a day. It was crazy. But the black boiler suits, the reason that boiler suits are usually light-coloured is so that whoever's wearing them can see if anything leaks on them. So that's why they're usually white or blue. You know, right? Black boiler suits, you can't get them. You've got to get them specially made, and they were like 150 quid each. Right? We didn't have another 300 quid, so we had one boiler suit each for the Edinburgh Fringe, and we didn't have any time to wash them because we were fucking doing gigs from, as you know, noon till 2 a.m. So after 30 days, at one point, I put it on the floor, and it stood up a foot on its own. And I would put it on and it smelled like soil. Yeah. And then after about 15 minutes, I don't know what it is, the smell goes because more moisture from your body has wicked into the manky boiler suit. Rock and roll!
I think the Doug Anthony All-Stars never washed their...
Yeah, they stank as well. They did. They stank. It is. Because it's too expensive to smell nice.
It's crazy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
But that, you know, I wouldn't. It's interesting with you because you were, you know, this, you know, crazy guy, fantastic compare.
He's a crazy guy.
You were drinking, you know, it was drinking. It was, you know, I would not have pegged you out of everyone and go, that's the guy who's going to go on and have a very successful career writing TV sitcoms and, you know, and murder mysteries out of everyone. What made you? I mean, obviously, Heaven was the first one, right?
Yes.
That you wrote. What made you switch over to that? Was it you were the first guy to do the sort of dead dad show that now is the traditional?
Yeah, my dad died before any of the other dads.
So was that the kind of impetus to move over to writing a sort of sitcom about family? Or
yeah, well, I'd always told stories about my family. Yeah. So I just thought I like Billy Connolly. I like the longer a bit can be. Like I had one show, I had a bit that was 42 minutes. Yeah. And like, if they don't get on board at the start, it's a fucking very awkward 42 minutes for everybody where they're still going, we don't care about any of these characters or what fucking happens to them. But so I'd written a show. I'd always like told stories about my family, and then my dad had a stroke, and then I had some funny stuff about that. And then I sort of put it in to the show, and then sort of that was getting it was really effective. People were like, had tears in their eyes, so I thought, let's put some music behind it. That'll fucking squeeze it. That'll squeeze the emotional boil. And so we did that, and then it was like this show where like people would leave in floods of tears, and that was like, and, but like everyone liked it. It's hard to explain like what it was like, and that's like it was sort of what they call the Dead Dad Show, the first Dead Dad Show.
Yeah.
And then the next year he died, and I had to do a proper Dead Dad Show. I was like, I think we're fine. We've already done the preparation for this one. Thank you, Father. Off you pop, Daddy. Jason's about to be famous. But it was just about, it's fine, he would have laughed at that. But it was more, it was the idea, those shows were about the idea of doing, like, because in the Fringe, this is all in the Edinburgh Fringe, these shows, when you got the hour, and I'd just been playing the clubs all the time, and because I was quite, known as quite a compere that could handle a rough crowd, all the shitholes used to boot me, and go, we're not going to kick any of the hecklers out tonight, and I'd go, yay! And so I was sort of sick of that. And then I was in the Edinburgh Fringe, and it was just like this this hour where I could do what I wanted. And I thought, do this, and then tell the story of my dad having a stroke, which I still think is really funny. There's just some really, really funny stuff in that. And that's what happened. And then the next year he died, so I did a show about him dying. And then because I'd done all these stories, and, you know, those shows have been sort of quite successful, TV producers came and said, like, what do you want? Someone said, do you want to do a prank show? And I was like, what prank do you think I'm going to do? Hello there, Dave. Your dad's dead. No, he's not. Do you know what I mean? What from that took you to prank show?
Yeah.
But all the stories about my family. So they said, do you want to write some? I said, well, I'll write stories about my family. Yeah. So I just wrote down all the things that had happened. That first episode ended with, originally, we didn't shoot it, and you're going to find out why, because it was the true story of when my mother tumble-dried a cat to death accidentally. Yeah, that's put your fucking sycamore tree into the context, hasn't it? It's just a tree!
Yeah.
But it's true that, you know, cats sleep in tumble dryers. You've got cats?
Yeah, but we've had... my cat used to piss in the tumble dryer.
It'll only do it once. But it's just that. And I was 9 and I came home and, like, it was like... Oh, mate, it's worse than that. I was upstairs. We came in, we'd been to Lightwater Valley, which is a theme park around here, as close to Vegas as it gets. and I ran upstairs... And there was a bad smell in the house, but my mother's a terrible cook, so whatever, you know what I mean? And I heard my sister, who would have been like 7 or 8, going, Jason, Mom's killed Tuppence. The cat's Tuppence. Mom's killed Tuppence. Come on, Mom's killed Tuppence. So I grabbed a baseball bat because I thought, this bitch's time is here. And I went downstairs and you should accidentally tumble dry the cat. But she was like, you've got to get it out. I can't face it. I was like 9. I know, and this is my favourite joke coming up from this bit, that I did get it out. It's stiff as a board, but fluffy, Richard. Oh, you see, there's the laughter. The laughter through the tears. That's what I do, the laughter through the tears. We're hurting and we're healing. That's how we do things, kids. Jump on board, I'm an emotional elastoplast. And then it still had a sheet of bounce wrapped around its head, like a feline shroud of Turin, Richard Herring. But that was the end of the pilot episode that I wrote had them burying the cat.
Yeah.
And then the son character turns to his girlfriend and goes, welcome to heaven. And I thought that was a nice end, but then they said you can't tumble dry a cat to death on BBC Two. Okay. So that ended.
But it was a very successful, well, amazing cast, first of all, like Gina McKee and Vic Reeves. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you?
Me, baby.
Yeah. Get you this. Playing Ramsay while Chris Ramsay played you.
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
That is correct, because we didn't know which part I was going to get, and we didn't know if he was going to get the part of playing me, so I created a part with his name so it would be easier for him to remember. Then he got cast as me, and I didn't have anything to do. So I ended up playing him. I was all mad. And what was weird is I had, like, tram lines, like proper old-school tram lines in my hair, and he was living in Manchester, and I was living in Manchester at the time, and he was already a bit famous before he'd done Heaven, you know what I mean? And we're standing in a pub, And I was used to, we were talking before, if you go out drinking with famous people, they stare a lot. And we're sort of having a pint and everyone's staring. And I was like, well, staring at Ramsay, that's fine. And then he went to the toilet and they were still staring. And I realised, because I look like a 90s ecstasy dealer. Fucking tram lines in my hair. Nothing's wrong. But yeah, it was amazing. And we got like loads of sort of Geordie actors got you know, a big break out of it as well. And that was like the biggest thing for me. You know what I mean? Obviously, my bit was big to me, but helping those people, which is.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's, well, you've always been very loyal to the Newcastle and the area. So it's, you know, it's, and stayed here, which is, you know, is.
Well, I fucked off to Manchester for 10 years, but that's because there was nothing here.
I'm from the south. Manchester and Newcastle are the same place.
Of course they are.
Forgive him,
brothers and sisters. He knows not what he says. Just look at it, all of his straight teeth. Look at them.
Lauren Patterson's dad wanted me to tell you last week when he was here last week.
I love Lauren Patterson's dad.
How much he loved that show. And he asked, I think, will there be another Series of Heaven?
God, I mean, the old traditional 10-year break between Series 2 and Series 3. I loved it. We talked about... hang on, I can see. So we talked about rebooting it with someone other than the BBC, but I think that's gone away. We talked about making a musical of it. And the talk was to make a musical and do 6 weeks in the Theatre Royal in Newcastle up here. And then I did the budget on the back of a fag packet. And I was like, nobody's got this kind of money, to be honest. And then someone talked about bringing it back, but I don't think it would be. I mean, I think it'd be interesting. I've thought about what the characters would be doing now.
Yeah.
I think my character would be into cryptocurrency and be and be brilliant at it. But yeah, the thought of doing it as a musical really, really made us laugh.
Yeah.
Because Vic Reeves, Jim, you know, is a singer.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Ramsey would do it. I mean, you know, it'd be hilarious.
Do you think Gina McKee would come back to do a musical version of Heaven?
I think she. You never know. honestly,
you never know. You do never know.
I had Jason Donovan play a body pop and entertainments manager in a murder mystery. You never know. You never know.
Well, those shows as well. We'll get on to those. Are incredible as well. And I've seen three of them. I think you've done more than that, though, right? You've done a series.
I've just finished the 10th and 11th.
10th one. Yeah, fucking hell. I mean, it's all the same thing, so it doesn't. You don't need to see one.
I ran out of ideas years ago.
They're really good. I really love. I mean, you got again. It's the quality of the actors you get for this, which is astonishing.
They really cover a shitty script.
They don't, but the scripts are great. It's funny, but like obviously, Johnny and Sean are just brilliant together. But then you get it's a cavalcade of people from the 80s and 90s. I notice I've not been asked to be in it. You've had
it's a very much Jacob the Baker Spider-Man situation. We're waiting for the right part.
I can see that. But no, that must be just such a thrill to. I mean, Chris Reese Jones or someone like that must be when he agrees to do your part.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah,
like that was the guy who, you know, Coach Trip, the show Coach Trip.
Yeah,
it was the guy who came up with Coach Trip.
Right,
was a producer and had a meeting with us, and he said, "What do you want to do like next after Heaven?" And I said, "I'd love to do it. I'd love to write a comedy about a serial killer." And he said, "Oh, right, just because I've always thought of setting something on a coach." And I was like, "Well, we could do a serial killer on a coach."
Yeah,
and that was the first one called Murder on the Blackpool Express.
Yeah,
and then it just, it just got crazy. But Johnny, I'd sort of written it with Johnny in mind, and then. Sort of, we asked him to do it, and he did it. And then once we had Johnny, everybody came. And then we had like Kimberly Nixon. That was Kimberly Nixon from Fresh Meat, Griff Rhys Jones, Sheila Reid, Eunice Stubbs, Mark Heap was in it as well. It was incredible. Is there a duck over there? What was was that the weirdest thing you've ever heard? That was a duck, wasn't it? That was
I insist on a duck.
But it sounded, as I was saying, it was like the duck was agreeing. Like, were you stifling a sneeze? Was that it?
Not very successfully.
Okay. Not very successfully. Well, I don't know. It came across as duck.
It did pretty well.
Wasn't.
You're in. I like your cameos in this show.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be there anyway, so let's get an extra 500 quid. Someone said, do you think you're like Alfred Hitchcock? I'm like, no, I think I'm poor.
I was saying to you backstage, I've been writing scripts for the last 20 years, and it's so rare to get something on TV.
Mm.
Or, you know, you get to a certain level, and then, every time it just falls away. So it's like, it's a real massive achievement to get this successful franchise off the ground and still going, and it must be hard to, you know, it's a complicated. Even though it's a comedy, is that the plots have to work.
But it's got to be a work in murder mystery.
Yeah, yeah, which is, you know, is difficult. I would imagine.
Awful. It's fucking awful.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, it's complicated to do them, but it's they're fun, and it's like because I don't like murder mysteries. I really don't like
right, okay.
Like I don't watch fucking Marple or fucking Poirot and go and fuck himself. And I think that's the right starting point.
Yeah.
And sometimes I write them when I'm pissed.
Yeah.
And that's good as well. It is. I did one where they said, have you finished the script? They do this all the time. I said, oh, yeah, it's pretty much done, like. And I was in the pub, and they said, can we have it tomorrow? And I was like, fuck, yes. So I went back home, and I'd already had 5 pints, and then I just got a bottle of wine, because I knew I couldn't come down and write.
Yeah.
And I just went, and what sometimes what they'll do is you'll write something, and then whatever it is too expensive to film. Do you know what I mean? It's too big. You know, you can't have like lasers firing at fucking outer space and then a spaceship falls. So I just pissed, went, and then Sean drives a coach through the wall of a warehouse. And then I sent it off for the next day. They were like, yeah, that's great, let's do that. And I was like, so we did that.
Yeah.
And it was pretty heavy. But yeah, they're great. We love doing them. It's every summer and there's like family. You've got Ed Byes, the director.
Oh, cool, yes.
One of my favourite people in the world.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
And
yeah.
He directed, like, Ab Fab and The Young Ones and Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
So he just tells you stories. Just sits and tells you stories. It's amazing. It's like you're at, like, television summer camp. And just going, and then what happened? What did Rick Mayall say after that, Ed? And then he comes in, he'll go like, what do you do at the weekend? And he'll list these incredibly famous people that have been to his house. And you just sit there and go, and what did they eat, Ed? And do you have the knives and forks they used on you, Ed? I love him so much.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah. I'm going to, look, because we haven't asked any emergency questions and you'll be good at these, I'm going to ask you.
Don't need to.
I'm going
to. Well, I would have Cheryl Cole at the front.
Yeah.
And it's not a regional thing.
No.
I'm thinking about volume.
Yeah.
Because she's slight.
She's little.
And little.
Yeah.
Not only, so volume-wise, going in,
yeah.
There's not loads.
Yeah.
And because she's little, she's not going to dominate movement.
It's good.
I'm 6'2". I'll decide where we're fucking going, Cheryl. You can pee on the bus. It's going to be an awkward way for all three of us. And at the back,
yep.
Controversial, Louis Theroux.
All right.
Because I've always wanted to meet him. Or give us his number. Well, and could, save him.
I could do that. It's a shame to, you know, meet Louis Theroux, but he can't really talk. I mean, he would have to be, oh, what about when you...
Richard with the yeah. IBS, he wouldn't be speaking at all, mate. Oh, what do you do on Christmas Day, Jace? Watch Louis cry.
I should have said it at the beginning, and I'll say it now, just because there's a gap. I will be at the, I will be outside on the way out, and I am selling all of these wonderful emergency question books.
Oh, what have we got?
We've
what
got
are the prizes we could have
we've
won.
We've got emergency questions,
okay,
1001.
Cool.
We've got the original emergency questions book. We've got a Christmas emergency questions book.
Bloody
we've got a
hell.
Would you rather? I'll ask you a would you rather. We're going random.
Oh, I hate would you rather.
I know this. There, some of these
come
are
on,
okay.
Then.
Some of these are okay, and I don't.
I once bought a machine gun.
Yeah.
I tried to buy a machine gun off a Russian soldier as a conversation starter.
Yeah.
I didn't. It was illegal.
Okay.
And we were going to take it. The ship was going to Edinburgh and the captain said, how are you going to get it home? And my mum was coming. I said, my mum will take it back for us. An actual AK-47. 3 cartons of cigarettes. That's all he wanted for it.
Okay.
Read your fucking book.
All right.
Someone's proud of the book they printed out. Come on then.
I'm trying to find a good. Would you rather? I haven't read what this is. I wrote this book so quickly. I haven't read most of it. Not that it isn't great. Would you rather be? It's like you writing an episode of your sitcom. Would you rather be in? Would you rather be in Fight Club but talk about Fight Club, or be not in Fight Club and never talk about Fight Club and think Fight Club is stupid, but never tell anyone? How did that get? How did that get in?
Were you in the pub when they said, "Is the book finished"?
How did that? I don't even understand what it means. Like, so I go.
That's a Schrodinger's cat sort of question.
Would you rather have to host ITV's Tipping Point once a week for the rest of your life, or or own a canoe? If NB, if you already own a canoe, it would be a better canoe than your current canoe.
Who published this?
Sphere. He published all my work.
Is it Penguin?
Sphere published all my books, including Can I Have My Ball Back? My struggles with testicular cancer. Pretty funny. And Problem with Men. And I've even got some DVDs. Do you think, Kenny, how many DVDs do you think I sell at every gig now these days?
24.
Two.
Closer.
Am I on the bell curve?
I think I sold two this afternoon, so that was a pretty good DVD day.
I used to sell... I made a DVD and I used to sell it after gigs for like a fiver or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I'd come home and my missus would always go, how many DVDs did you sell? And I'll be honest with you, sometimes I couldn't be bothered to sell them and I used to go to the cash point and get my own money out. We made £100! Yes, they did pay in five £20 notes that have no fold marks in them.
And also, the programmes you've got, if you want to give a donation to Scope on the way out, you can.
Yes,
but you
do.
But you don't have to, but you can if you want. If you carry cash. Do you carry cash?
I don't carry cash.
No.
I'm like the Queen.
Yeah.
I'm dead.
I've got a watch.
Oh, fucking choose. Right, you can grieve one thing: the cat, the tree, or the Queen. What's it going to be? The Queen. You're going Queen, are you?
Tree.
Really? Oh, tree.
Tree.
Trees. Okay. That's all right.
Tree wins everything.
Yeah.
You've got a tattoo of Eric Morecambe on your leg.
I do.
Wow.
Short.
Nope.
What's he doing? He's doing something a bit odd, isn't he?
It's Eric Morecambe as the devil.
Right.
Like, climbing up my leg with a cigarette in his mouth. Now, what I would tell you, Richard Herring, is ecstasy is a very powerful drug. Ideas take on meaning and resonance that perhaps it shouldn't be.
Is that a tribute to Eric Morecambe or a criticism of his
A tribute to Eric Morecambe.
Yeah.
I love Morecambe Wise.
Yeah.
That is proper. And if someone can make you laugh without saying anything, that's my favourite thing.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, Eric Morecambe.
Yeah. Well, he can't say anything now, can he?
Not since he got inside my mum's tumble dryer. Where all things end.
I've shut my book. I'm so excited. Good. Well, that's all I've got. That's all I've got to talk to you about.
Okay. So do I get the job?
No, you don't.
What the fuck is that as an end? What is that as an end?
It's some joke.
You're charging money. Yeah. You're charging money for that. I've run out of the six things I've Googled on you. Please come next week for the next fucking monkey I've got to research.
I was, you know, tired. I was tired on the way up in the car.
No, you were tired, and I said I'll do most of the talking, and fucking at one point I was nearly having an asthma attack just watching you sitting there sleeping into fucking comatose. And I was looking in your eyes like, should I stop? And you were just there going, keep going. Wander on, traveller, wander on. Richie, a bit nappy sleepo. That's fine.
I've got more.
That's fine. You don't
I've
need more.
I've got more. I've got all these. I'm going to ask you every single question in each of these books until we're done.
Okay. In your hastily written books.
Most of them I can't.
Question 42. Who's picking the kids up from school tomorrow? Question 304. Why?
I could probably find something there. When I was doing the 1,000 questions...
1,000?
Yeah, it was a fuck of a lot, 1,000.
Yeah, that's not good for anybody.
Let me, I'm just going to go... I'm going to go quite late and see if... We'll just see what the random thing that comes up and see if it's any good.
Okay.
Who is... Question 942. Who is the best Benny?
The best Benny?
Yeah, the best Benny.
We've got Hill, one from Crossroads.
Yeah.
Boot, who's a comedian who's now a monk, I believe.
Oh, yes.
Any other Bennies?
Benny and Bjorn, yeah.
Right, pretty dark serial
top
killer.
Top Cat's what I've chosen.
Pretty
Benny.
Dark serial killer. Geordie man just went, Abba.
Benny from Top Cat.
Benny and the Jets, which is a song.
Yeah.
I couldn't call it. Ben Affleck, well, he's not a Benny, is he? It's not fucking Benny Affleck. And the Oscar goes to little Benny Affleck. In his new film, Smarties and Poo Poo. That's all Ben's then, isn't it?
Question 970. Mm-hmm. What's the best town ending in Ford?
The best town ending in Ford?
Yeah.
Stamford?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said, if it comes up on Pointless, I'm saying Bishop Stortford.
Oh.
I think that'll be Pointless.
Yeah.
Do you plan yet? Have you done... You must have done Pointless.
No.
You've done MasterChef and you haven't done Pointless.
No, I did Celebrity Mastermind.
Mastermind?
Yeah.
That's what I
meant. Involved the learning of facts, Richard Herring.
Yeah.
I did Celebrity Mastermind after 3 years of being the standby celebrity.
Oh, was it?
Oh, that's the level you've got on this podcast now, mate.
So
that's
how fast
your ship's sinking.
Did you have to go in every time?
Nope.
No, just they'd ring
I
you.
I just had to
ready.
Be there.
How much they pay you for not going in?
£1,000. £1,000 for 3 days of just being available.
And it's pretty good, because when I did Celebrity Mastermind, I had to give my fee to charity, so...
Yeah. But that was like, it was like a week. So for a week, you can't... Put any gigs in and do anything. Yeah. So it's paying for your time. When you do it, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
So I did that for like 3 years. So the first year, I learned everything. Billy Connolly was my subject. I learned everything about Billy Connolly. And then the second year, I sort of refreshed my ideas on Billy Connolly. And then the third year, I didn't do anything about Billy Connolly. And then the fourth year, they rang up and said, hello, it's Celebrity Mastermind. I went, oh, hello! I'd like my £1,000 on Friday, please. And they went, no, we're very lucky, someone's fallen ill. And I went, oh, fuckity, fuck. So I had to drive down, and because I'd moved to Newcastle at that point, so I had to drive down to Manchester, and I listened to the first 3 hours of his autobiography. And I was hoping, well, I hope they only ask about the early stuff. And then I won it.
Oh, yeah?
I got two wrong on my Billy Connolly. And then the general knowledge. Go home. I player it. My eyes start moving like a shark. I'm part of the machine. It's amazing. It's going to. What was the submarine that sank the Kursk? What do you call flapjacks, bastards? It was really. I'm paraphrasing. But the four of us who were on, like all the Twitter action was like, who the fuck are any of these people? But one of the blokes was really posh, and he presented some property program, you know what I mean? And so they've only got 1.6 million. What are they going to do? That kind of thing. It was property overseas, and he thought he had it locked down. And his thing was like 17th century composers, you know, those wankers that go on with that.
I do.
And he fucking ripped the composers. I'll give him his due. Fucking nailed it. And then his general knowledge, he did all right, but not against fucking shark boy. And he was livid afterwards. He was proper livid.
Yeah.
And they said, are you coming for a drink for the party? And I was like, no, I'm just going to get in the car and drive home. I just left. I could hear him going, but I learned everything. Not about the real world, posh boy. Not about the real world. And then I came home, and the week after it was on, I was a question in my local's pub quiz.
Oh. Who's the biggest paedophile in the...
Straight to that. You went straight to that. All your years of comedy training, all of these options around you could have plucked from a writer, a stand-up, a cultured man from the London, and you just went, ah, fuck it, paedophile, that'll do. That's what I'll pluck from the tree. But,
oh, yes. Dear.
Biggest need a
mustache. Are you ever mistaken for Jason Cook, the American actor?
No, I'm not, sadly. Jason Cook, who was in Days of Our Lives.
Yeah.
He's very good looking.
Yeah. Are you ever mistaken for Jason Cook, the crime writer?
No, but he sometimes has my credits on his crime writer
page.
Does he? Yes. The cheeky bastard.
There must be a lot of Jason Cooks.
Oh, there's loads of us, mate.
Yeah.
It's the Northeast, we're churning them out.
Yeah.
Another Jason Cook for the fire? What's this one going to write about? Fucking murders again. Oh, here we go. Yeah, there's loads of us.
Yeah.
There's one in Manchester who does stand-up, Jason Cook.
Is there?
Yeah.
That's got to be... That can't be allowed.
Well, it's Jason Cook with an E, he is. I'm Jason Cook without an E. That's how I took all the E. That's how you end up with eyes like this.
I came second. I don't like to talk about it, but I came second in Celebrity Mastermind.
Oh, God, that's embarrassing.
I got the highest ever score on Celebrity Mastermind, though.
So you got the highest ever score, but you came second?
Because then the next person on then got the highest score.
All right.
So for a second, I was the highest scoring ever Mastermind.
What was your score?
I think I got about 35.
Oh, here we go. The rules.
No, I think they've changed it because I got 35. So I think 34 or 35, which is really high. But they...
That's nothing.
What did you get?
I got 106.
Did you? They do it. It's shorter now, so everyone gets about 20 now. So, like, if you go... But it's... I couldn't win anything for ages, and I can't believe I worked so hard on Celebrity Mastermind.
What was your specialist subject?
Rasputin.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Richard.
I learned everything. I can't speak Russian. I learned all the Russian words phonetically. I knew the street that he was born on. I don't know it now. And it was Poshtoflekhovskaya Strasse, or whatever it was. And then...
Oh, I think... I'm not quite sure you got it wrong.
But I got it.
Is that a Welsh town?
I had to pause and then get it out. And then he said, oh, you could have just said the Street of the Peace, Alice.
Fucker. I had a bit... Who was hosting it when you were there? Was it Humphreys?
Humphreys, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's dry, isn't he?
Yeah.
He said to me, this got cut. He said to me, so you write sitcoms? I said, yes. He said, what's the recipe for the perfect sitcom? I said, if I knew that, I wouldn't be sitting here doing your show, Mr. Humphreys. Which I think is funny. And which he did not. And then he went, right. Proper like a school teacher, isn't he?
Yeah.
He went, right, general knowledge, straight in.
I can't believe you haven't done Pointless. You've got to do Pointless. I bet you'll be good at Pointless, right? You've got a good general knowledge.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Yeah.
I like where I am now.
House of Games?
Nope.
House of Games?
I'm in the darkness, man. I love being in the darkness.
I'm going to get Osmond to get you on.
All right, I'll do it.
Yeah. I can do it. I've got the power to do that.
Have you?
I've got stuff over. I've got stuff over, Osman. I'm a kingmaker of.
We've all got stuff, haven't we? We've all got stuff over others, haven't we? That's how show business works. It's what have you got over? Well, I've got. It's like top Trumps, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
It's like dirty top Trumps.
It is.
What you got over, Osman? Oh, I've got a little bit over. Don't want to say any names.
Luckily, I could choose Osmond because I don't think there's that much there. There's a couple of things.
Richard, man, you can't. I'd like this podcast to go out.
So look, tell me, you don't like do like loads of stand up anymore, right? You've got your own club.
Yes.
So is that you just concentrating on just doing your like monthly club, which I understand is a fantastic club and sells out every month?
Yeah. See, there you go.
Oh, you just, well done. And is that enough? Is that enough for you now as a stand-up? Because you are. I cannot reiterate this enough. But you are a fantastic stand-up comedian.
Oh, I don't like compliments.
I know, but you.
I find it deeply uncomfortable.
And you know, you're someone I, especially from that time when I was gigging a lot in clubs. You're someone I really remember as like doing brilliant work, but also being able to, you know, play any crowd.
Oh, fuck off.
And doing interesting stuff, you know, like you're doing interesting, you know. There's stand-ups who I think I still admire who know how to do a 20 minutes and, but maybe do the same 20 minutes all the time. It doesn't feel like that's you.
No,
you're big into improv.
I mean, well, so I just do my club.
Yeah.
Which is not in this comedy club. This is a wonderful comedy club, but my comedy club's down the road in a theatre called Customs House, which is like a community theatre as well. And it's very big. It's lovely. You should come and play it if you want.
That would be nice.
Fix the attitude, then we'll ask you. But yeah, and it's a place to fuck around. But interestingly enough, when you were talking about the recent local events, I have well, testables. See, because I was a bit pissed the other night, and I did buy a tree costume. Which I'm going to keep for a few months before. Is it too soon? You don't even know what I would say as the tree. Are you that close-minded? Huh? Okay.
Well, it's, you know, there's a guy... I mean, the people listening to this at home, they're listening in, like, March 2024, so they may have forgotten what this is about.
Oh, yeah,
but there's a guy who went to the place and planted another tree.
Oh, yeah. And so there's a sycamore gap we're talking about, the tree that was cut down in the northeast that apparently all of us fucking needed in our lives.
But then now he's upset because they're taking down the tree he's planted that he said is a... So everyone grieves in their own way and creates their own kind of tributes, and sometimes the tributes are a bit inappropriate to say, everyone goes and plants their own tree there, that'll ruin it. So maybe your dressing up a tree is going to be a very respectful tribute to...
That was one of the things it could have been.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's not one of the possibilities. At the minute, I'm gauging permission to wear the tree costume before I commit to writing whatever it is the tree is going to say. Okay. But I just thought it was a funny little thing when I'd had a few drinks.
Yeah.
I thought, did you know that someone put on Facebook, that tree stood for everything the Northeast stands for? Everything. Photosynthesis. Nutrients from an underground expanding root structure. That's what this region's all about. Forget the bloke that punched the horse. We're all about turning sunlight and converting carbon dioxide into oxygen. That's what we stand for. We're all about a tree that was 2 miles from the nearest fucking car park. How do you know, Jason? Because I took my daughter to see it. We got about 400 yards. Four said it was too fucking cold. But I grieve for the tree I've never seen.
Maybe he's just going, you know what I mean? How big should I have the Christmas tree this year, Dad?
What's wrong with all of you? There's homeless people littered around the streets out here. No, no, ignore them. There's a tree being felled. Ignore them. I don't know what is the thing with the tree. It's,
well, I mean, you know.
People hang on to weird stuff.
Yeah.
It's our Diana. Do you know what I mean? The tree was last seen in a Mercedes going through a tunnel in Paris.
It's the restorative power of laughter, though, isn't it?
This is the soothing balm of the laugh.
We have to laugh our way through the terrible tragedies that occur.
And it seemed to me you lived your life avoiding candles in the wind. Come on. Come on, son. That's where the big money comes from. You're right to clap. You're right to clap.
You're right. Oh, God. Well...
You know what the problem is?
Yeah.
You can't be asked to walk anywhere, so you're not ending this, which you should have done 10 minutes ago.
You're just quite sitting there,
just going,
comfy.
It's just like, I'm not going to go to bed, I'm too tired. That's all right, I'm just resting my eyes.
I'm actually okay. There have definitely been the podcasts where I've nearly fallen asleep. This isn't one.
Well, I was going to say, if there's anything like this one, has there been any way you've nearly contributed?
Sorry. I'm a very, very generous host.
You are very generous.
To you and Brian Blessed. It's been lovely listening to you. It's been like having a little radio on with a funny little northern man on there.
it's been an honour.
It's been really.
No, it is.
I can't believe.
No, you did your thing on me. I'm doing my fucking thing on you. Yeah. It's been an honour because I've loved this podcast and I love you obviously and known you for a long time, and then you asked me to do it and I was like, Jimmy Nail's busy. bloke who punched horse must be on holidays. And I apologise in advance for the low numbers this is going to get. But of course I would have done this at any point. I'm a big fan of everything you've ever done.
Thank you, man, and vice versa.
That wasn't sincere. That was really automatic. It was just really automatic.
I was just thinking of a couple of things I couldn't really say. It was out nearly everything. I thought, oh, no, I can't.
No.
Not the Jacob's biscuit, man. I can't say it. I've been a big fan of that.
I am what I am.
What's coming? Are you doing more Johnny Vegas murders?
Yes. There's two more. Yeah. One's coming out at Christmas this year. So if this goes out in March, this is redundant doing this. Yeah. And then there's another one going out at some point next year, probably in the winter.
Cool.
And we've filmed them and we've edited them. And I've got my comedy club at the Customs House. And then hopefully, you know, the long walk to the grave.
Yeah.
To see the cat one more time. As he sits in the tree. Yeah. Next to me, Dad. Fuck it. Go for them all.
It's very good. Well, look, you seem content with what you have, and you should be content with what you have.
This is why the middle class has patronised the shit out of us. And I think you're a lucky monkey. And I tell you what, I'm going to give you £1. And you can tell your wife about that. Thank you, Richard.
Good. I'm glad you know your place. my family are from Middlesbrough and there's no one lower than me.
Not Middlesbrough, Middlesbrough. Not Middlesbrough. Show us your feet. Do they point the same way? Which part of your body is clubbed? Middlesbrough.
It's a Benson Street, Clapstone Avenue. Look them up. Clapstone Avenue is quite posh and Benson Street is not posh.
Okay.
That made me, those two streets in Middlesbrough. That's my grandparents.
On the mean streets.
Yeah, mean streets of Middlesbrough. Fantastic stuff.
Just look at the complete apathy that's in your nerve. You look like you've been in a sauna, then had a hot chocolate. This is when, if your wife's gone out and she comes back and it's like 10:30 and the kids are still up. I'm just like going, oh, I just thought. Do you want me to finish the podcast?
Yeah, I can do.
Is that
done that once. Al Murray did that once because he wouldn't shut up, so I had to go and get my train, so I left. And he carried on. This is nice because the nice thing about doing this is we've not been restricted to an hour. When we first started in this podcast, we do like 90 minutes or sometimes 2 hours.
Right.
And it goes giddy like this, and it's fun, isn't it?
It's lovely.
It just goes, you run out of stuff, and then, you know.
Not going to happen, mate.
No.
This is a hostage situation now.
Why did we start this gig at 8:30? That's what I don't understand.
I never know.
What's that about? They're not even selling food today. Sunday night. And my other gig was at 4:00. Why didn't they make it like 6:00? And I could be home now.
Well, why don't you close your eyes really tight? It's 6:00, Richard Herron. It's 6:00. All your dreams have come true. Okay. Tell us your dreams. What are your dreams?
I thought I was going to wake up at home. But close my eyes.
This is your home now. All these people. Everyone gets one deer with Richard.
They're very, aren't they? Well, this is a fantastic club. I'm sure your club, which I've not yet played, is also as fantastic. But aren't they great? This is a great audience.
Yeah,
it's a great audience.
At what they do. That's always phenomenal here, man. That's, yeah. It's, you know, that's, you can just look around and see they've got nothing else in their life. It's a Sunday night and they're here. Baby Jesus' birthday and they're here. Just please, Richard and Jason, put some happiness in me. I've got nothing. Tell us, cheer us up about from the tree. Have you got a sprig of something?
No, they're lovely. This, yeah, has, been nice. A, this has been an right. absolute joy.
It's been all right. It's been all right.
The chairs are weird.
I'd say it's one of my top four podcasts I've done in this venue.
Yeah, I think it's...
So it's top four.
One of the top three of yours I've listened to.
Well, look, I'm going to be out there in a minute. I'm very happy to say hello. And if you want a picture of me looking quite tired, yeah. Sunday next year, knock yourself out.
No, Richard,
oh, that guy's off. Look, he's right.
Run, run.
I'm fucking wait. No. It's literally just, I'm just wrapping. I mean, you're right. It's going to go on another 10 minutes. It's going to take a while to get through this.
Richard will be in his little half a walnut shell and he'll be sleeping with his little hat on and his little blanket that we're going to make out of a tiny little handkerchief.
Yeah.
And he's just going to go, just tear the DVDs. Put the money in the cup. This is the big pitch, man. You've got I'll be outside. I cannot wait to meet you all.
I don't care. If you want to buy some, if you want to buy something, come over. I'm cool. I'm chill. I'm chill.
Oh, great. Now it's fucking geography teacher time. Hey, kids, come on. Not Mr. Herring, I'm rich. Okay, let's think about it. Norway, fjords, fucking mad, isn't it?
Shall I leave you to it? Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive rise and applause. The incredible, what a fantastic ambassador for the North East.
Richard
Herring! Thank you very much. Cheers, you've been brilliant. Thank you very much for having us. Thanks, everyone. Stan. You have been listening to Rahulastapur with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Jason Cook. Scant regard to the musical sounds over these credits. I'm indebted to my producer and friend, Chris Evans, not that one. Thank you to George Lingford and Beck Cliff. And thank you to everyone at the Newcastle stand who looked after us marvellously. It was wonderful to be there. I hope we'll be back very, 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 very soon. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Foster Stripe.com production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.